Okie dokie. Are we ready for...
We had better be.
What is certainly not the third time we've attempted to record this podcast with mysterious technical difficulties.
Very mysterious.
They really are mysterious. But I'm absolutely sure that the third time is the charm.
Yes.
And we're not going to get that weird message again telling us that it didn't work.
Well, we would know what it said if you didn't click away from it.
Well, I was
right
clicking
away
to see if it worked or not, and then it turned out it didn't. So.
Error messages mean it didn't work. That's what an error message is. It's not working.
What else do you need to know?
I don't know.
It didn't work, Damien. All right. Anyway, you got your drink?
Oh, yes.
Because I got my drink. And the only other thing that I have to say, Damien, get that alligator away from me.
Oh, come on.
Get that alligator away from me.
Oh, man.
Because my friends, we have a large, maybe 4 foot long inflatable alligator from the dollar store. It's the most wonderful thing that this little girl has ever gotten in her life. She had a dollar. She went to the dollar store, immediately came out with an alligator.
And as one does.
That freaking thing has been the bane of my existence all week long. What day is it? It's Thursday, right?
I think so.
Long enough for it to be all week long. Wherever I am, that's where the alligator is.
First, I hate inflatable toys. It's the worst toy.
Because they love them.
Yes, they do.
At first.
I know. And
then what happens?
They're all Lenny from Of Mice and Men.
Well,
because
okay.
Inevitably they're gonna pet it too hard.
Yeah, and then I know. And when they open it, because I always want to get the inflatable toys for them, even though I know
you're sick and wrong.
And I know. Well, it's all part of motherhood. You know the things are gonna happen, and you do the things anyway. This has been my existence for the last 19 years.
Yes.
So anyway. Just get that alligator away from me, okay?
All right.
That's all.
if you ever listened to me, you would know, don't buy the alligator.
I didn't buy the alligator. I didn't go into the dollar store. I just gave her a dollar. She came out with the alligator. Also, I would like to point out that maybe I'm the one who buys inflatable toys, but you are the one who came home with a bearded dragon.
We talked about that, though.
We did talk about it. We talk about a lot of things, and I always end up saying, okay, Damien, that sounds like a good idea.
It's not for me, though.
No, it's not for you. Our son got a bearded dragon for his birthday.
And he's
it
was a good boy.
It was obviously fate, because they went to the dump, and they came home with this enormous, one of these tanks that you could only find, one of these gigantic tanks built into a like a wooden cabinet, which you only find in the homes of the very rich and the very poor.
Yes,
for some reason. And dentists also.
And we went there, and we saw it.
Yep.
And the old dump guys, who I really like them.
Yep.
One of them, I'm
one
sad
of them,
though, one of them there looked like William Faulkner.
Is
like,
he not there anymore?
William Faulkner has disappeared.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It's end times.
Yeah. Anyway, they were going to keep it because they had a snake in the bathroom, and they wanted to catch the snake and keep it in the but
they decided he could stay in the bathroom.
The rule of the dump is we get to take
finders
it.
Finders keepers, I know. So you got it. We got this beard. And I have to say, well, he wanted a snake at first, and then he found out you have to feed it not only mice, but baby mice. And not only do you feed it baby mice, but baby mice are called pinkies. And he could not. He has a very tender heart. He's a big kid, but he has a very tender heart.
Yes.
And that was not going to fly at all.
He wasn't going to do that.
So this little guy eats, what, crickets, mealworms, and then pellets of some kind.
Do you know how many mealworms you can get for $4?
No, how many?
100.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
See, the thing
is... I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
You could...
Listen to how excited he is. This is sincere, ladies and gentlemen. This is what I have done to my husband over the last 19 years. He's super excited. He comes from Los Angeles.
I had like turtles and weird stuff when I was a kid, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but you had
we never had like anything called a dragon.
I know. And he practically, the thing is, like, I thought they were exaggerating, but he's really quite fancy.
He's got a charming little guy.
He's very charming. He's very winsome. He thinks he's hot stuff for one thing, which is hilarious. I mean, he's a baby too. He's just cute. He has much, much more personality than I was expecting. Doesn't smell bad. I mean,
no.
he's had good long time to show himself as a bad smelling creature. You know, and it hasn't happened yet. So.
There's a little bit of reptile funk, but It's not like Turtle Funk.
Oh, Turtle Funk is bad.
Yeah.
Mice are
you know,
terrible.
This sounds heartless, but when our last pet mouse died, I was so relieved.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was never a fan of the mice. Not at all. Not at all.
Gerbils are okay.
Gerbils are okay. Are gerbils the ones that stay awake, like they stay awake during the day? Right?
Maybe. I don't know.
Who's that little bastard who just runs all night long?
That's the hamster. He seems to be slowing down because I believe he has some sort of vertigo he's developed or something like that. Impetigo or something. Yes.
He probably is hallucinating that someone's following him around with an alligator at this point. There's a lot of that going around. Well, let's move along. We did watch a movie. We have a movie review. It took us 2 days to watch it because I turn into a pumpkin at 11 o'clock or whatever. But
well, I started it late.
Yeah.
And you got hooked, but you were too tired. So
right. It was so good that I didn't want to fall asleep during it. That's how good this movie was. I was willing to actually stay awake till the end of it is what happened. So, okay. So it's called Blue Ruin.
It's 2014.
Okay. 2014.
The actor who I think he did a lot of the writing as well, Macon Blair.
Okay.
Just a great face.
Yeah. Devastating face, I would say.
This is his second movie he made with the director, Jeremy Saulnier. Okay. Keep an eye out for these guys. They're quite good. You're going to see more of them.
Yeah. Definitely. These people know what they're about. Holy cow. Completely in control of every aspect of the movie at all times.
to give sort of a summary. The movie starts with the main character, Dwight. He's just
a beach bum. Right.
He's living in this kind of shell-shocked. Yeah, very.
He lives in a
dilapidated blue car with bullet holes in it.
Yeah.
And one day a police officer comes to him, and the conversation is great because he never really looks at her, and you get the sense he can't really hear her or see her, but she tells him someone's gotten out of jail. And that sets the whole story in action because that person is out of jail and he has to do something about it.
Right. You can see that he's been waiting all this time. He's been almost like in suspended animation waiting for this moment to happen.
Yes.
And he's obviously been making plans to a certain extent.
But not actually prepared for it.
No, not prepared. He knows like he's the one. He's got this heavy weight of destiny on him. You can see that. And you slowly realize it's a family thing. And oh boy, I mean, it's very Shakespearean in a certain way. I know I say that a lot for movies, but
this is Shakespearean.
This is Shakespearean. The alligator is Shakespearean. Ever look at that Shakespearean bearded dragon? But it was like no, but it was. We had the same thought. It was as if there was a Shakespearean tragedy, and then
it ended.
A lot of people die at the end, and the curtains close, and this is like 10 years later, and it's the next generation, and what are they going to do?
And everything has already been set in motion, right. And they're just locked in.
Right. Yeah. And boy, yeah, there was fate, but just because you're fated to do something doesn't mean you necessarily know how to do it. Super violent movie, throughout the whole thing, but if there were a few scenes that were incredibly violent, so you know, if you're sensitive to that kind of thing, this is not the movie for you.
Very tense movie.
Very tense. There were some funny points too, though. There were funny parts.
They get a lot of humor out of taking action movie conventions,
and
sort of foisting them upon this character who's really more than a little inept.
Yeah,
and so. I not to give anything away, there are a couple of moments that are better than anything you're going to see all year. The scene in the diner where he's talking to his sister, and they have a revelation of what's happening.
Yeah.
And then there's another scene in the house. I'm being vague because I don't want to spoil it. There's another scene in the house that is one of the most suspenseful things I've seen in years.
Where he's gotten into the house and he's for the first part of it, he's got a good plan, and he rushes around doing the thing, and then when it comes down to it, he has no idea what the hell to do.
Exactly.
You're so scared watching him not know what to do. It's awful. Yeah. Oh my goodness, it's not a super fun movie, but it's so good. It's so good. I'm really glad I watched it. We both definitely recommend it. Right.
Very much so.
All right. What else? What else do these people come out with?
The next movie that they made is something called Green Room.
Okay.
Which is a punk band. They're on the they've hit the skids, and they get an opportunity for a paying gig, but it's at a neo-Nazi compound.
Oh yeah.
So they go, sort of compromising themselves a little bit, and they witness a murder, and wackiness ensues.
That was not the impression. I felt like it was wackiness free. I heard a lot of screaming.
There's a lot of screaming.
It's basically
a horror movie in which the monsters are neo-Nazis.
Okay.
And pit bulls.
Oh.
And it is quite violent. But quite good.
Okay.
So, Patrick Stewart is in it as the villain.
Now you know. Oh, Patrick Stewart. Okay.
Yes.
Well, now you know what kind of people we are.
Speaking of entertainment, we need to discuss something.
What?
They are making a Broadway musical, big budget Broadway musical.
Yes.
Of King Kong.
Really?
Have they never?
Yeah.
Have they never seen King Kong? Don't they know what happens,
when
you bring King Kong to Broadway? What is the matter with these people?
There's going to be some ice skating at some point, and that will be touching. But ultimately, it's not a good plan.
It's like that Australian guy who wanted to clone dinosaurs from DNA.
Right.
It's like,
Have you not seen Jurassic Park? Come on.
So there is no giant gorilla. First of all,
it's very disappointing. Wait a minute, Damien.
Yes.
Damien, did you say that they were making a King Kong musical that doesn't have a gorilla in it?
Well, let me explain.
Okay.
They're using, obviously, some sort of giant puppet robot type deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not King Kong. I don't care how good it is. That's just not King Kong.
Because in the original, it was a real, actual giant gorilla, right?
He wasn't as big as they portrayed him. That was movie magic. That was like when they had Alan Ladd look like he was 6 feet tall. But you've seen Mighty Joe Young. That's all true.
I have not seen Mighty Joe Young, as a matter of fact. I'm sorry.
But it's a real gorilla.
Is that something I should have brought up in like pre-Cana? Because that would have been... That was not on the questionnaire. We didn't have a questionnaire.
No, we talked about gold.
Yep.
Getting insurance.
You know what? We must have actually been listening, because we both remember the two things that they told us. Number one, invest in gold.
Yes.
And these people had a lot of gold on them. It was a little bit weird. Mm. And the other thing was...
They took their own advice.
Yeah, they did. Keep the lines of communication open. And here we are. We each have our own microphone.
Yes.
What do you know?
Yes.
But I don't really have any gold.
No. Well, you got your wedding ring is mostly gold.
I think so. Didn't we get it at a mall?
We did. We got it at like one of those Zales type places.
Yeah, that's okay.
Sorry. It is gold. I know mine is gold because it keeps getting warped.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway.
Just like you, darling.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about the Benedict option now that everybody else has gotten all calmed down about it? People got upset about it in two distinct waves, and I think the second wave has passed, so I think it's our turn, right?
I think it is. I read a take on the Benedict option.
Okay, I feel like we should both say up front, neither one of us read the Benedict option.
Nor will we.
Well, you know,
I feel like Rod Dreher,
I read some things by him, and I have never read anything that made me want to read a whole book by him.
I know, even when he writes something that I read, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Then he goes on for another 12,000 words.
Right, and you're just like, that's enough, Rod.
All right. He strikes me as a little bit...
Precious.
I was going to say hysterical.
Okay.
In any event, I haven't read the book. I know that I've heard him interviewed on it. He's a smart guy, and there's some interesting ideas in the book. But...
I know that you read an essay by my dear friend,
Deirdre. If you would let me get to it.
I will not. I'm keeping the lines of communication open with an alligator.
So anyway, your friend Deirdre Mundy, how you say it?
Yeah, she's your friend too, though.
I guess so. I don't have any friends. Anyway, she read the book, and she wrote an essay for Alatea.
Yep.
And was that... I'm not going to make those jokes. Anyway... I thought it was a really smart take.
Just if you want to look up the essay, it's called Where Dreher Lost Me on the Benedict Option.
And there's been a lot of criticism of Dreher's book, and a lot of it is, I think, kind of unfair by people who either...
Haven't read the book like
haven't
us.
Read the book or weren't going to give him a fair shake to begin
right.
with, or who made asinine criticisms right out of the gate.
Right, yeah.
But this is actually smart because she read it, and she's a smart person, and pretty... She's a pretty good writer.
She is a good writer.
She writes, for instance, Dreyer has said, she's quoting him, "I believe that Christians now have got to realize that we're living in a post-Christian civilization and take measures to build a kind of ark for ourselves with which to ride out the dark ages, to hold on to our faith and to tender the faith for such a time as light returns and civilization wants to hear the gospel again." So Deirdre writes, "Here's the problem. From a Catholic point of view, we already have a metaphorical ark, the church. We don't need to build a new one, a more isolated ark to write out what Dreyer sees as
an
a coming dark age.
Ark. Yeah, that's where
we can continue to live in the ark we already have as members of the body of Christ." That right there is I'm sorry, that's the end of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's right.
She's
great. What else is there? I think that from what I gather, the Benedict option is something that people who take their faith seriously are already doing. Like, it just, as far as I can tell, it just basically means, like, make sure that you're being spiritually fed and that you have some people that you have the faith in common with, and then go ahead and live your life according to it. Like, oh my God, already doing that. This is not...
Check. I'm all set.
I don't know. It sounds like a big deal over something that should be just common sense to me, to be honest with you. But
to a certain degree.
I didn't read it, so...
I was listening to... It made me think of this when I was driving home and I got sick of the Boston Sports Talk Radio trying to explain
something that happens
that
to
racism
me
in Boston doesn't exist.
No.
It doesn't.
Nope.
So I'm flipping and NPR, I was too late to listen to the news and it was all like jazz and folk music.
I'm
God
sorry.
Help me.
I
no.
am so sorry. So, was it Mountain Stage?
I
There's
don't even know.
A song in my heart, just a simple little tune. But the rhythm, the melody won't leave me alone. Around the world, it's just a simple tune.
Keep that fucking alligator away from me.
It's the alligator of alligators. I'm so sorry.
It is. So I end up listening to the Christian radio station. And
it always comes in so well.
I know.
It's terrible.
It's awful.
It's like the only good signal you can get. And they have these insane...
We've got mountains here. We shouldn't be getting any signal, but come through.
No, we get country music and we get this ridiculous Christian station where they do these bizarre little radio dramas where it's just like a bad imitation of the 50s or something. I don't even know what they're doing. They're kind of fascinating.
They never go anywhere. Those stories never go anywhere.
Much like this podcast. Okay, go ahead.
Anyway, so they have this Scottish preacher on, and I kind of love listening to this guy.
Well, he's fun to listen to.
He was fun to listen to. But he was talking about Jesus telling the disciples, I'm going to make you fishers of men. And this preacher's point was, we're supposed to go out. If we're following Christ, we have to go out into the world and evangelize because we're not keepers of an aquarium. And that made me think of Deirdre's stuff.
It's not a new idea. So apparently that's what Dreyer says, is that you are supposed to at some point like take your refreshment and regeneration and go back out into the world and stuff. But I feel like people kind of skip over that part of it. Yeah. And the next thing you know, they're trying to make sure, you know, there's no martial arts in town because martial arts is from Satan and stuff like that. Basically Catholics are just as stupid as everybody else. And, you know, what are you going to do? So you might as well blend in so that it doesn't show as much, I guess.
I guess so.
I have something interesting written down here, and it doesn't look like it's my handwriting. It says Val Kilmer is what?
Calculon.
Okay.
As a guilty pleasure, I follow Val Kilmer on social media. And Val Kilmer is someone early in his career when he was a big movie star. I think it was John Frankenheimer, after working with him, who said, if I was making the Val Kilmer story, I wouldn't hire that son of a bitch. So he had a bad reputation for being not just difficult to work with, but just a dreadful human being to work with. And I don't know what the hell is going on with him, but he posts art.
I thought he was dead, to be honest with you.
He looks dead. It turns out he has had cancer the last several years and didn't want to say anything because he's a Christian scientist.
Oh, no.
Poor
guy.
He didn't want to reveal he had surgery because that's not quite in line with his teaching, so he's saying it's all... Anyway, he's going around the country right now with a one-man Mark Twain show. And
that seems really unlikely and to his, me.
He posts these stories, these really bizarre stories about people that he's met.
Yeah.
And like he's basically like coming on to different actors, actresses when he, it's just, it's very strange. And then I realized, oh my gosh, he is the character Calculon from Futurama. Oh. So I encourage you all with that knowledge, go check out Val Kilmer on social media. It's good stuff.
All right. See, you're making a difference in the world, Damien.
Go make a difference. Get that alligator away from me. Okay?
I will get, I'll get all the alligators away from you. I had a poem that I wanted to read, and I turned the light out in this room because it was too hot, and now it's too dark, and I can't read the poem. Could you turn the light on for me, please?
Yes.
Thank you. All right, while Damien turns the light on, I'm going to flip to my... This is a poem by Seamus Heaney, who I saw in person one day.
And Heaney?
No, come on, stop. And the only thing I can remember about seeing Seamus Heaney in person is that I was wearing this purple shirt, and there was a button missing, so I closed it with a twist tie from a bread wrapper. And I'm so ashamed. That's the only thing I can remember. I think he had hair.
He was a white-haired old man.
He was, yep.
He had glasses.
Were you there?
I was there. Oh. It was at like Boston College or something.
Were we dating at the time?
I believe this was pre-dating.
All right.
And he borrowed a couple of cigarettes from me.
Is that true?
No.
Oh.
Although the Catholic novelist Michael O'Brien, I did meet once, and the dude smoked half my cigarettes.
I entirely believe that, and then he probably asked you to pay him back for the cigarettes that you borrowed from him, would be my guess.
Well, right, I mean, the world was ending. What were we going to do?
No, so. I'll show you pierced. Anyway.
Oh, you know, you're thinking of the other one.
Oh, I'm thinking of Bud McFarlane. You met Bud McFarlane, too.
Yes, I did.
You?
Yes, I did. And you know what? I am writing a series of stories about a business. Go ahead and check it out online. If you Google Dusty Old Cars, I've written many stories about this.
This is a fun story.
And I realize now there are a lot of similarities just personality-wise between a gentleman by the name of Stefan Kondo Demetraki and Bud McFarlane Jr. Just the type of personality and the way they come across.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
I'm telling you, I'm going to interview
husband. Nope.
Because he's met a lot of interesting people.
I have not.
And has lent cigarettes to many, many interesting people, apparently.
My career was doing much better when I smoked.
That's not true. You worked at Sears selling tires.
Yeah. But I smoked.
I'm going to read a poem, A Basket of Chestnuts by Seamus Heaney. Are you going to interrupt me?
No.
Okay, but he has that little smile on his face, and I feel sure that he's going to interrupt me.
No, I never interrupt your poetry.
That's true. Okay, A Basket of Chestnuts. There is a shadow boost, a giddy strange assistance that happens when you swing a loaded basket. The lightness of the thing seems to diminish the actual weight of what's being hoisted in it. For a split second, your hands feel unburdened, outstripped, dismayed, passed through. Then just as unexpectedly comes a rebound, downthrust, and comeback, ratifying you. I recollect this basket full of chestnuts, a really solid gather-up, all drag and luster, opulent and gravid and golden-boweled as a money bag. And I wish they could be painted, known for what pigment might see beyond them, what the reach of sense despairs of as it fails to reach it. Especially the thwarted sense of touch. Since Edward McGuire visited our house in the autumn of 1973, a basket full of chestnuts shines between us, one that he did not paint when he painted me, although it was what he thought he'd use as a decoy or a coffer for the light he captured in the toe caps of my shoes. But it wasn't in the picture and is not. What's there is comeback, especially for him. In oils and brushwork, we are ratified. And the basket shines and foxfire chestnuts gleam where he passed through, unburdened and dismayed.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, you like it?
I like the use of the word gravid. I always appreciate
good word.
That. It is.
I would like to start the Society for the Advancement of the Use of the Word gravid. Would you like to join my organization?
After 10 children, I think, haven't you done enough?
I am ultra gravid right now. No, I'm not. No, I didn't mean it that way. I just meant I like the word. Whew. Oh my gosh, get that alligator away from me.